Great. It is just a little after 10 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday, April 13th, 2010. This is the Judiciary Committee, Senate Judiciary Committee, and we have a quorum. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Wachowski, myself, Senator French. I want to thank the members for being here. I know that schedules this time of year are just stretched to the limit on all fronts, and yet we do have important legislation here that we need to address. We've scheduled this bill as quick as humanly possible. It was read across yesterday. This is House Bill 36 I'm referring to, of course, and we have the bill's prime sponsor here, Representative Kyle Johansson. Welcome. Good morning, Representative Johansson. Come forward, put yourself on the record, and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Kyle Johansson, Representative for House District 1. Alongside me is Sonny Christensen, who's been working on this bill for about 3.5 years. This bill, basically the two main portions of this bill are disclosure of the funds spent during the signature gathering portion of the initiative. Currently, as we all know, citizens have the right to put a question on the ballot that goes through a system, goes through the Lieutenant Governor, goes to the Department of Law, and it's looked at and decided whether it's a legal question to put on the ballot. At that point, they can go out and gather signatures based on the constitutional requirements of how many and in how many districts. From the time they go out to start gathering signatures until they literally carry those boxes of signatures to the Lieutenant Governor's office for to make sure they're good signatures, during that entire period, there's no reporting requirements for how much money is spent on that effort. We don't know any amount of money that anybody's spent at any time in the past on that portion. So what this bill does is requires disclosure of the money over $500 spent in that effort. The second major part of the bill that I'm very excited about is the meetings in the judicial districts. We're all very familiar with the voter pamphlet, where it has, if there's an initiative on the ballot, the question, and they give you a page for pro and a page for con. The idea was to turn that into a living exercise using the Lieutenant Governor's office, who oversees the Division of Elections. And we wrestled over how to implement that. We worked with the current governor when he was Lieutenant Governor and the current Lieutenant Governor on trying to craft a practical way to implement this through their office. And what we came up with was at least a minimum of two public hearings per judicial district. That would give you 8 across the state. And it would cover, obviously, by judicial district, by extension, all parts of the state. Lieutenant Governor would be able to choose at his or her discretion where they should go based on whatever factors are at play, maybe the topic of the initiative or population base or whatever, but figure the Lieutenant Governor can make those logical decisions. And basically go out and hold hearing, informational only, obviously no changes to the idea or the question. That would basically make the voter-driven initiative process moot. We don't want to have any input into the question, but to provide a forum overseen by an official presence, being the Lieutenant Governor, saying pro and con, what do you think, why did you introduce it, what's in the bill. People who may not like it say why they don't like it, and have a public forum where people could come up and question each side. Why did you do this? Does this mean this? What does this mean? Why do you oppose this? And have a conversation statewide about that prior to it being voted on by the people. There are a couple other smaller issues in here that, frankly, I'm really not that tied to. A lot of we had some stuff from APOC that would make things a little bit easier, just things that seem to fit under the title. But in essence, it's a disclosure and an information effort in the bill. So lay it before you and see what the Senate Judiciary has to say.
Thank you, Representative Johansson. Ms. Christensen, did you want to say a few words to us about the bill, or do you want to wait and walk us through the sectional here in a few minutes? Okay, good. Let me ask you, Representative Johansson, because I am not as sort of initiative knowledgeable as some folks. And one aspect of this that's been talked about a lot is are the sort of the two phases of an initiative. And the one that I've never had much understanding about is that first phase, when you're sort of in between the time that you think up the initiative and the time you get it, I guess, approved by the Lieutenant Governor to take the signature books out. Is that the pre-certification phase? Is that what you call it?
I'm not sure the proper
okay.
term, but I know there's the phase where you get the sponsors and they go out and they do their deal prior to signature gathering. But Sonia is the expert, and I'll defer to her. I'm Welcome. Smart enough to do that.
Welcome. Go ahead.
Sonia Christensen, staff for Representative Johansson, through the chair. There is a pre-certification phase where sponsors of the initiative, you have three prime sponsors, and then you have to have 100 signatures for registered Alaskan voters, and then you have your language. And that, in a packet, is turned in to the Lieutenant Governor's office. They go through the language, and you know, there are certain things that the initiative can't be used for, constitutional amendments, appropriations, and creating courts and changing jurisdiction of courts. If that passes constitutional muster, then they're approved to go collect their signature statewide. I would have to defer to the Lieutenant Governor's office as far as what they officially call that, but pre-certification certainly makes sense.
For our purposes, we can call it that and be relatively accurate.
Yeah.
And then once you've gotten the certification, so to speak, you get your signature books, and that's mm-hmm. when we see folks in front of the grocery stores and so forth gathering signatures. Yeah. And is there any name for that phase, or is it that's just sort of...
I've referenced that as the signature gathering phase.
Okay, good enough. I like that. I understand it. And then finally, there's the, you know, once you've gathered the signatures, then there's sort of the election phase, we'll call it, when you're sort of both two parties or maybe just one party is pushing or opposing mm-hmm. the measure.
And that's the phase when the, through the chair, when the ballot initiative is approved for the ballot. All the signatures are, they have enough signatures in enough House districts, and they're approved for the ballot. They're going to be on the next statewide ballot. So that's the third and final phase.
So we'll call it the pre-certification phase, the signature phase, and then maybe we'll just call it the election phase, and that'll help us understand sort of the different aspects of the bill. And let's stop and thank and welcome Senator Coghill to the committee. So, Senator Coghill, we're working on HB 36. We've just gotten an overview, and we've turned to committee questions. Maybe we should have you, Ms. Christensen, walk us through the bill, just so we've kind of got built a record over these sections. It's not a horribly lengthy bill, but it does have 16 sections. Maybe you can just walk us through that. Thank you.
Section 1. Basically, Section 1 changes the... changes the reporting requirements for initiatives. It bumps that disclosure required after you're certified to basically as soon as you're approved to collect signatures. So when you're in the, they call it the initiative proposal application phase, it would bump the disclosure back to that point.
So just so I understand, this is what we've called the pre-certification phase. Mm-hmm. And this is from the moment this idea becomes a gleam in the mind of someone. If they start spending money or collecting money to sort of help them put the language together and get a little proposal together, is that right or am I off?
Through the chair, Sonia Christensen, staff to Rep. Johansson. Not technically. As soon as they file their paperwork with the Lieutenant Governor's office, that's when they're required to file. When you're just a couple people sitting around the kitchen table, there's nothing to file because you're not technically organized yet.
Or I guess, you know, I mean, just so we're building a good record, you could be sitting around the, you know, the corporate offices sure. of cruise ship company or, you know, a union hall. Sure. It doesn't really matter. But can you raise and spend money during that phase or not, or do we know?
If there is no ballot initiative application, then you're free to do with your money what you will. Once there's an official application, then you have to start to file under this bill.
So if I wanted to hire a lawyer to help me with the language of my ballot initiative, I could do that, mm-hmm. Spend whatever sum I want to spend, and so I get really great language when I go to the Lieutenant Governor's office. That's not a reportable expenditure.
Yes.
And the answer is?
It's a non-reportable expenditure.
Okay. Other questions on Section 1? Thank you. Please proceed.
Section 2 of the bill, a lot of this bill, we have to change a lot of definitions because we're bumping the disclosure requirements back. So Section 2 already says in statute that groups have to register before they make expenditures. for a ballot measure. So what we're doing in Section 2 is adding language saying that they have to register when they spend money for an initiative proposal application. So we're covering that signature gathering phase in Section 2.
Go ahead.
Section 3, under current law for candidates, if a group is formed to support or oppose a specific candidate, and if they spend more of a third of their money towards supporting or opposing that candidate, they have to have the candidate's name in their title to make it more clear to the voters. Section 3 basically mirrors that for initiatives. It changes the number a little bit. So if you spend more than 50% of your money, so if you spend a majority of your funds supporting or opposing an initiative on the ballot, then you have to have the ballot measure's name in your title to make it more clear to the voters.
I will probably have a question for APOC about this section, just because I think the word intend, while I understand what you mean, seems a little fuzzy, especially with respect to a group and what they intend. And I'll ask them if that's the same language in the other section pertaining to candidates, and whether it might just not be better to say once they do spend that much, it kicks in. So you just get the you don't have to worry about what's in the mind of a group. You just make it a hard and fast rule, 50% and so forth. But that's my only observation on that section. Go ahead.
Section 4 is also a section that we have to change the definition, so we include that initiative proposal application or that signature gathering phase. So we're just bumping that back again in Section 4. Section 5, under current statute, initiative, referendum, and recall are all grouped together in one group. And in Section 5, we remove initiative so we can apply those special disclosures to initiatives in their early phases. We don't want, the intent was not to include the same type of referendum and recall, or the same type of disclosure for referendum and recall, because it's not as much of an issue as statewide ballot measures are.
Okay, thank you.
Section 6 puts initiative back into statute to require those new disclosures once they meet that $500 threshold. You have to start disclosing, and it also brings back the schedule of when they're required to report, which is basically every quarter.
And could you, on that Section 6, the last sentence of that section on lines 13 through 15, I flagged that this morning, and I would just want to make sure I understand it. If the report is a first report, it must cover the period beginning on the day an initiative proposal application is filed and ending 3 days before the due date of the report. For some reason, I'm just having a hard time figuring out how that actually works on the ground with a ballot initiative. So maybe you can just tell me what you think it means.
I believe that this language mirrors what is already in statute, but I will refer to the APOC. Experts on that one from
Fair
APOC
enough.
Just to clarify. I don't want to offer any incorrect information.
Fair enough. Other questions? Please keep going.
Okay. Section 7. Again, we have to change the definition of contribution. So under current statute, contribution isn't, we can't require disclosures for contributions for ballot measure applications because they're not officially on the ballot. So all this does is bump that back so we can include those disclosures during the signature gathering phase.
Thank you.
Section 8 does the exact same thing for expenditures.
Okay.
Section 9 was brought to the sponsors by APOC. They looked at their statutes and they said that it would be helpful for them if they could tighten up their definition of a group. So all we're doing in this is making sure that those initiatives in the signature gathering phase are covered under the definition of a group.
Okay.
Section 10, this was added in the House Judiciary Committee. This is basically an echo of a statute that already exists saying that an initiative has to be confined to a single subject. It's restating that again in Section 10.
Okay.
Section 11 requires signature gatherers to carry a full copy of the initiative. Under current statute, if it's more than 500 words, they do not have to carry it with them. They only have to carry a summary of the initiative. So Section 11 is an opportunity for Alaskan voters to be able to review the language, the full language, and not just a summary.
Okay, we'll call that the full copy section.
Mm-hmm. Section 12 requires public hearings that Representative Johansson went over already. So it provides a schedule for those public hearings, so they're done in a timely manner. It requires two public hearings in each judicial district. It does not, it leaves the testimony section open. So if you have a grassroots effort that doesn't have the funds to be able to travel to Barrow and have a hearing, they can submit oral testimony or they can teleconference in. It doesn't require them to be there physically. We didn't want to include anything onerous that would put one group at a disadvantage from another.
And I read a nice memo this morning from, it was sent to Representative Stoltz from Alpheus Board about that, about the bill in general, but about this provision specifically, and he was careful to point out that there was no First Amendment infringement whatsoever through this language, and I thought that was a good piece of analysis.
That was something that that the House Judiciary Committee worked hard to confine to make sure that it wasn't impeding on anyone's First Amendment rights.
I have become, I'll just say while we've got this section in front of us, I'm just, you know, I understand the impulse, which is to get the word out, but even thinking about your judicial district, Representative Johansson, a spread out district, disconnected from itself by huge bodies of water. And I just wonder, I guess one thing that popped in my mind this morning was maybe asking that these hearings be transmitted via webcams to the internet. I've become a big proponent of webcams, and I won't put you on the spot right now, but just think about that and think about, you know, whether that doesn't really get the word out from Ketchikan to Metlakatla and from Ketchikan to Sitka, from Ketchikan to Juneau. When you pick a place to have your hearing, who comes to these things? And I look at this hearing, and this is a perfect example of a hearing this morning that's taking place with, you know, 20 interested citizens, but maybe hundreds of others who be sort of curious about what's happening here, and they just can't be here for whatever reason. If you stream it live to the internet, you're helping spread the word.
Mr. Chairman, if very quickly.
Oh, someone tells me it is streaming live to the internet. Hi, Mom. So we're taking a step in the right direction. But anyway, just give that some thought.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick comment. I don't mean to interrupt the analysis of the bill, but one example that I think works very well in rural Alaska, when the energy committees, and luckily both of the senators involved in that, went on the road this year on the House side, when we had our hearing in Bethel, the event of having either a legislature or the executive branch come to town, in our case, spurred the very strong public radio network in rural Alaska. We had live streaming of our hearing to over 30 villages that rely on the radio station out of Bethel. So I think those are options and things that we give the Lieutenant Governor the opportunity to be creative in doing that.
Getting the word out, sure. Yes. Makes sense. Keep going.
Sections 13 and 14 is a correction by the drafters. Initiatives will be, if they collect the correct signatures, will be on the next statewide ballot. And the current statute doesn't clarify that can be on the special election ballot if the stars align and that happens to occur. So sections 13 and 14 basically say that they direct the Division of Elections to prepare pamphlets if there is a special election, which is something that they're already required to do, and I'm pretty sure that they would probably do that, but it's just reflecting that in statute.
Just by way of comment, and when initiatives fall in our election cycle, I've grown curious over the years because it seems like all our initiatives appear on the primary ballot, never on the general. And it's, I think, a holdover from the constitutional provision that says they should be on the next statewide ballot, but that was written back when the session stretched all the way through the summer. And so you could have an initiative approved and a session end in mid-July and then have the next general be in November, of course. But now with the 120-day and then the 90-day session, every initiative will always appear on a primary ballot with rare exceptions. And I've thought about trying to change that, but it's a constitutional change, of course, and won't be doing it inside this bill, but it's just something, you know, I wonder about whether who is best served by that. I think you could sort of argue it both ways. You know, some questions you want on a primary, some questions you want on a general. But we are stuck with a system that means that most voters don't come to the polls to vote on initiatives.
Mr.
Just
Chairman,
a curiosity.
I agree with that. However, I would not want to carry the constitutional amendment, but I'd be happy to co-sponsor it if you would do all the heavy lifting.
Right. Yeah.
But I agree. I think that is
an interesting. It's an issue, definitely. Please keep going.
Section 15 requires a standing committee of the legislature to review initiatives that are certified by the lieutenant governor. This section is an opportunity for the affected agencies to be able to speak with the legislature and talk about implementation. It's just another opportunity for a public hearing.
And Senator Coghill.
You have a point on that.
Go ahead.
In my view, instead of saying review, we should say hearing, because I don't know what review means for a committee. I think we know what a hearing is. That's a gathering. Having been around this building long enough, does that mean the chairman reviews it?
I think it's a good question. Let's turn to the sponsor, and I'll just add on to that, and you can maybe answer all these questions at once. Who decides which committee? That's one question in my mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the kind of the vision I had when this language came up was to use the jurisdiction of the uniform rules that are currently under place by the legislature. And as far as Senator Coghill's point, I'm open to any way that makes it more specific as an actual hearing. And also want to make it clear that although it's obvious if you read the language, I want to make sure that the intent is known that in no way to have the legislature have any ability to tinker with any portion of this citizens' initiative, very much in support of the protection of the citizens' right. This came out really in a subcommittee when an initiative passed a couple years ago, and I was sitting on a subcommittee, and we questioned the commissioner about the implementation of some of the portions of that initiative. And he sat there and said, we're unable to do what the initiative told us to do. We do not have the ability to. We don't have the resources. We just can't do it. We have an increment to try and do what the initiative said. We're asking for another chunk of money for this, that, and the other thing. And so it dawned on me that sometimes maybe these initiatives pass, and we kind of, it's almost like a mandate on the departments without any of their input. And I thought it would be valuable for us to hear practically what the effects on the day-to-day operations of the department were. So that was the intent. Obviously, any committee chair could hold a hearing at any time on any initiative. They have that power, but they also have the power not to, and that's kind of what I was a little concerned about.
And just to follow up, as between the Senate and the House, who would decide, you know, which, or I guess I'm looking for some direction as to who sort of makes the assignment to make sure this takes place?
Yeah, that's a good question. That hasn't come up unless Sonia's figured that one out. I don't have a solution to that. Hopefully.
We'll think of something.
Well, I'm sure you will.
thank you. I think that takes us to the end. Section 16 just looks like, go ahead.
Section 16 through the chair is just the effective date clause.
Very good. Further questions for the bill sponsor or Ms. Christensen? I don't hear or see any. Thanks so much for the overview. We do have folks who want to testify. We'll turn to them while we've got a committee here. Just for the committee's information, we have representatives from APOC to answer questions. We have Mr. Bullard to answer questions. Tom Dosick from the Attorney General's Office, also associated with APOC. And Holly Hill is here from APOC, also to answer questions. John Kramer from the Lieutenant Governor's Office, and online, I think Gail Fenumeni. I hope I said her name right. Oh, is she here? Oh, I beg your pardon. Welcome. Also to answer questions. So that's those are the experts we have to answer questions, but we also have folks to testify, so let's turn to them now. Lorna Shaw. Lorna Shaw, are you here or online?
I'm online.
Welcome to the committee. Put yourself on the record and your affiliation, if any, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman French and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lorna Shaw, and I'm the Executive Director of the Council of Alaska Producers. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 36. Council of Alaska Producers is a mining trade association whose 13 member companies operate the active hard rock mines and projects in Alaska. Our 13 member companies were also the most recent targets of a ballot initiative. To refresh your memory, 2008's poorly written ballot measure 4 was officially titled the Clean Water Initiative, although we termed it the Anti-Mining Initiative. There were originally three different versions of the initiative that went to the Lieutenant Governor for approval. Two were approved for signature gathering, and until 6 weeks prior to the election, we weren't sure which of the two versions, or if both versions, would be on the ballot. The whole process was extremely complicated, and while the idea of all three initiatives was the same, the versions differed slightly. And as you well know, details matter. In any case, signatures were gathered on the two approved versions of the initiative, and signature gatherers statewide approached people, asking them to sign here to stop Pebble. However, nowhere in either version of the initiative did the word Pebble appear. Signature gatherers, for the most part, were unable and unwilling to engage in discussion about the details, and rarely, if ever, did they have copies of the initiative itself. One of the flaws in the initiative process is the lack of vetting, and you've discussed that a little bit today. And as we see today in this hearing, bills in the legislature have a number of hearings, and changes can be made as the bill goes from committee to committee. The unintended consequences are usually discovered, and in the process, the end result is a better law. In ballot measure elections, Alaskans don't get to vote on a concept or an intent. Rather, we vote on the black and white of an initiative. It's critical that voters are given the information to understand what the initiative does and doesn't do, and not what the backers meant for it to do. Back to ballot measure 4, the DNR was authorized by the legislature to spend $25,000 to provide education and clarity on the initiative and to answer some of the policy questions people had. But AIPAC essentially gagged the DNR officials on the topic, shutting down their website and ending their role in any dialogue. Thankfully, in HB 36, legislative hearings are required, and state agencies can and must discuss the potential impact of initiatives. This can only help our voters. And the public hearings hosted by the Lieutenant Governor will be helpful, I think far more helpful than forums hosted by groups with an agenda relative to the initiative. Giving people the ability to ask questions gives them far better information and gives them far more than a bumper sticker or a slogan. In terms of financial disclosure, I think more is better, and HB 36 provides for that. With ballot measure 4, signature gathering began in the late fall of 2007. It was complete by January, and the signatures were certified by March. At that time, parties filed with AIPAC, and the first disclosure report was not due until June, nearly 8 months after any activity began. It was expected and clearly reported that the mining companies were defending themselves, but who was paying for the other side, and why did we have to wait all of that time to find out? HB 36 provides for earlier answers. The initiative process in Alaska is important, but it's also important to be sure that Alaska voters have access to the information they need to make informed decisions. Who is behind it? Who is paying for it? What are the effects? What is the meaning? Are there unintended consequences? HB 36 improves the initiative process, and I hope that you'll support this bill.
Ms. Shaw, thank you for your good testimony. I don't see any questions, but again, thank you. Next up here in Juneau, we have Chip Toma, who wants to testify. Welcome, Mr. Toma.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and we'd be happy to hear your thoughts on the bill.
Chip Toma today representing Responsible Cruising in Alaska, which brought the statewide initiative in 2006. It was passed successfully by the voters. And I wanted to bring a couple of things to the committee's attention first, just real briefly. 73% of all initiatives that are filed with the Lieutenant Governor are never seen on the ballot because the signatures are never gathered or the question itself is thrown out or withdrawn for some reason or another. Of that remaining 27%, 15% of those fail at the ballot and only 12% pass. So in the last 15 years, we have seen a total of 8 initiatives pass the ballot.
I'm sorry, two, last
15
years?
15 years. Two on term limits, two on campaign disclosure reform, two on game management, one on medical marijuana, and one on the head tax. And those are the initiatives that have passed. So that's what we're making legislation for today, is these types of initiatives that finally get through the process and are approved by the voters. So out of a total of about 75 of these initiatives that are originally filed with the Lieutenant Governor, only 8 have passed in the last 15 years. I want to compliment Senator Coghill especially for his service on the House Judiciary Committee last year. I think his actions there reformed this bill to a great deal. This was a very, very punitive bill, the original House Bill 36. It has improved dramatically since that time. The one suggestion that I would make throughout the bill, and I can give you specific references, is that we should be including, not only in the text, but also in the title, those groups who are filing in support and also in opposition to an initiative. The biggest challenge that we had with the head tax in 2006 is the immediate lawsuits that were filed by the industry against the Lieutenant Governor and against responsible cruising for the people that were gathering the signatures, whether those signatures were valid or not. We went through a number of court challenges before this was approved by the Lieutenant Governor and got onto the ballot. I think all of those actions by the opposition have to be also disclosed. And I think from the very beginning, if I do go ahead and drop an initiative proposal into the Lieutenant Governor and immediately a group comes up to oppose me, I think that group deserves to be disclosed as who they are and how much they're spending immediately, as I am. So that would be the level playing field. And I think there are a number of places, including in the title, where we could put the word "or opposing" throughout, and that would really level the playing field. And I think that is my basic testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little concerned about, the group definition, for instance, on page 6, and that's on line, starting at C on line 4, I think that is a perfect example of the group that's opposing. So we have an example of the principal purpose of filing an initiative. I think it should say for the purpose of filing or opposing an initiative. And then finally, on page 7, on line 16, it references the penalties for violation of this section. And it'd be nice to know what those penalties are. The original penalties were pretty outrageous. If we did not hold hearings, if the initiative sponsors did not hold hearings, then the initiative was void. And luckily that was all changed, and I'm gratified to that. But I think that any penalties, and I don't know what those penalties might be, it would be nice to enunciate those a little bit better. And finally, I agree with the comment, I think, by Senator Coghill that we should be conducting hearings rather than reviews. And that's on page 8 at the end there on section B. The lady who testified first, for instance, they were opposed to the Pebble Initiative, I guess is what we'll call it. They spent over $9 million. So this is where the money is spent, in opposition to initiatives. It is not spent in gathering initiatives. I've worked on 2 statewide, 1 recall, and 2 local initiatives. I have been a volunteer in all those efforts. I have never been paid or compensated in any way for gathering signatures. The money is spent in opposition to initiatives. It is not spent in gathering the signatures or in support of the initiatives. By probably a 5-to-1 margin, the opposition outspends the initiative proponents. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your time.
Mr. Toma, thank you. Questions, Mr. Toma? One second, Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 1 talks about individuals having to file it says, looking at line 7, a group organized for the principal purpose of influencing the outcome of a proposition. That takes pros and cons, doesn't
right.
it?
I would think that better would be on line 10 after the word filing, say, or opposing. And I think that would make it a lot clearer to put that right into the section.
We'll have a moment, I'm sure, to walk through these questions with Mr. Bullard.
Okay.
Because, and just sort of parenthetically, in a separate piece of legislation, we've sort of moved to the group term of person, trying to grab everybody who might play, given right. given the Citizens United decision. I will have a chance to ask the bill sponsor about this, but the Citizens United came down since this bill was introduced,
right.
and it sort of changed the landscape with respect to who's going to play in these matters, and we'll be looking for definitions that grab everybody.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Very good. Next up is Jason Bruni, my constituent. Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman French, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Bruni, and I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 36, This bill is one of RDC's top priorities. I've also brought copies of today's Anchorage Daily News editorial for each of you to read in case you're interested. The editorial supports both HB 36 as well as Senator French's 284. Personally, I'd like to thank you, Senator French, for your leadership on that important issue, and thank the committee for hearing HB 36 today. Although we sometimes may question the appropriateness and the role of the petition process as a means of governing, RDC appreciates the democratic rights of Alaskans to change state law through the initiative process. However, as we have seen over the last several years, a number of proposed initiatives have been brought forward that do not necessarily have the best interest of the state nor its people in mind. Furthermore, tactics are often used in the signature gathering process that mislead the public and misconstrue the issues and impacts at play. RDC believes that openness and transparency must be at the forefront of good government. The framers of our Constitution were wise to put the initiative process into our Constitution. Interestingly, Vic Fisher, one of the 55 delegates to the Alaska Constitutional Convention and a previous ballot initiative sponsor, spoke at the 2008 RDC conference about the initiative process. I'm going to quote Mr. Fisher. Quote, "Believe it or not, I was one of the people who voted against the article on the initiative because, I argued strenuously at that time, that the initiative is a device that lends itself most to special interests, to groups that want to get something that they cannot get through the legislature." End quote. Mr. Fisher's words were quite profound, and we have witnessed these special interests embracing the initiative process over the last decade. In fact, in just the last 5 years, the Alaska business community has been the target of numerous punitive ballot initiatives pushed by anti-business and environmental interest groups unable to accomplish their goals through the legislative process. Each of you who generously give of your time to make laws for this great state are required to disclose how you raise money and how you spend money. Why shouldn't we hold those who are attempting to change state law through the initiative process to that same standard? And why wouldn't we make them disclose the source of their funds while they are collecting 30,000 plus signatures statewide? This openness and transparency will bring into the light of day the agendas, hidden or not, of the initiative sponsors. This bill will also require both public and legislative hearings for initiatives. Frankly, this is a good idea. The process each of you as legislators go through to pass laws is extremely thorough. Unintended consequences of a piece of legislation are usually vetted through the numerous committee hearings, public testimony, and floor debates that a bill requires. I'm going to talk a little bit about the specific comments that were made from the previous speakers. With respect to Section 3, I concur about the question about the intent, the language that was given on if a group intends to make more than 50%. Senator French, I think modifying that I would completely support. Also, I would very much support webcams. Again, the more people that we can educate about the process, the better. I think Senator Coghill's point about requiring hearings and questioning who assigns those hearings, I think needs to be clarified as well. Indeed, I don't even have a problem with Mr. Thoma's request for the disclosure of those opposing. I think the more disclosure, the better. It's better for Alaska. And indeed, we still need to know what was spent by the initiative sponsor in ballot measure 4 the last time around. We've yet to figure that out. In conclusion,
what was the loophole in the law? Or maybe this is a question better for the sponsor, but I guess I'm just surprised that you could spend lots of money against an initiative or for it and not disclose. What was the loophole? Do you know, or I'll ask APOC?
Through the chair, I think I would default to APOC.
Fair enough.
In conclusion, standards must be put in place to ensure a candid process, and I applaud the House for its overwhelming support of this bill passing 35-5. This is one of the most important bills to the people of Alaska, and I urge your support. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Good statements. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bruni while we have him? Don't see any. Thanks again. We do have, who wants to answer questions on behalf of APOC? Holly Hill, welcome. Please put yourself on the record and welcome to the committee.
For the record, my name is Holly Hill, Executive Director of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Good morning, Senator French. I also need to state for the record the five-member Alaska Public Offices Commission has not taken a position on this bill. I, as staff, am simply available to answer questions for the committee.
Fair enough. My last question to Mr. Bruni, I guess I'm still curious about, what were we lacking in the past that this bill adds that makes sure that Alaskan voters know who's spending money advancing or opposing ballot initiatives?
I think, sir, to answer that, it might be good to use an example, and I realize we also have Mr. Dosik on the line if he can assist me with this. Right now, under the law, if a bunch of people get together purely for the purpose of raising signatures, and then they cease to exist at the time the ballot is certified, APOC has nothing to do with them. They're not a group under the law. The definition of a group is two or more people formed for the purpose of influencing a ballot proposition.
So it pertains only to the election phase, not to the signature phase?
Correct, except that if expenditures are made by a group which is formed for the purpose of influencing an election, they are reported after the certification. So Ms. Christensen explained earlier that three people get together, they go to a division of elections, and they say, I want to create a ballot initiative. They have to have 100 signatures at that time. They pay their money. They get some forms, and then they go about the signature gathering phase. This bill, as I understand it, captures that time frame from the first application with the Division of Elections up until the Lieutenant Governor certifies the bill.
So let me just ask you, I mean, you could have during that signature gathering phase TV ads, I guess, running for and against the signature phase saying, sign the petition or don't sign the petition. And you could have forces sort of advocating for or against the initiative, the underlying initiative, but in the guise of trying to gather or not to gather the signatures.
Yes, sir, that's correct. And again, if I'm speaking inappropriately, Mr. Dosik, please correct me. As long as those expenditures are with the TV ad that says, citizens, go to Fred Meyer at 10 o'clock on Thursday. This is a wonderful proposition there. We want you to sign it.
Hot dogs and balloons, right?
And they spend $5 million on that TV ad. That is not an issue for APOC.
Not a reportable expense right now.
Correct. Wow. However, if for instance, they were huddled in the back room and cutting deals that said, once it passes certification, I want you to do this, after the certification, we would consider that reportable.
But money spent, and when we're calling this
the election phase,
right?
Correct.
That's all reportable.
Under this law as written, the word ballot proposition in the changes to 065C now includes an initiative application. So as Mr. Toma was talking about, 050 says you must register before expending money to influence a ballot proposition. The term ballot proposition now includes
signature phase.
Includes the application.
Okay, hold on one second because we have a question from Senator Wilikowski.
If somebody wants to influence an issue that's in Juneau, whatever it is, do they have to file with APOC? Let's say somebody wants to spend $1 million on a TV campaign to influence an issue that's before us. Do they have to file with APOC?
If they're formed for the purpose of influencing an election now.
Not an election, but just let's say a group formed to support this bill, and they wanted to spend $1 million doing TV ads to persuade the people of Alaska to contact their legislators to pass HB 36. Do they have to file?
I'm sorry, sir. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, legislation is a different animal. It's not an election, so we have no impact on. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Dosik. We have no concerns regarding that. People can influence their legislators. We have rules on lobbying, but people can influence their legislators, testify at meetings. That's not an election. That's the legislative process. If and of course, you're aware people manipulate the system all the time. But if you have three individuals who sponsor an initiative, they file with the Division of Elections, and then they disappear into the woodwork and never have anything to do with it again, a separate bunch of people, I won't call them a group because a group has a separate definition, bunch of people get together purely to gather signatures with the intent that they are going to disappear the moment it's certified. We have absolutely nothing to do with that except for this bill.
Yeah. And it seems like there's two separate classes that we're creating here. We have one class for the people. We have an initiative process where the people, if they're not happy with what we do down here, they're allowed to go ahead and file an initiative, file a referendum. And we're putting their requirements, with this bill, we're putting requirements on them to go ahead and file. Whereas if some group wants to influence the legislature, they don't have to file anything. Is that?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. There are lobbying rules, and depending on how that influence occurs, the lobbying rules may take effect. But under the campaign disclosure rules, currently, without this bill, purely to gather signatures and spend money on television ads for the purpose of gathering signatures and not for the election is not reportable. This bill would make that reportable. Given my earlier example, the three individuals who file the proposal and disappear, then there's a separate bunch of people that gather for gathering signatures at the moment, spend unlimited amounts of money on that activity. Then if they disappear, it gets certified, a third, this time, group forms to influence the initiative. Our laws are in place for that.
Yeah, and just a comment, Mr. Chair. I think there's some merit to this bill. I think disclosure is a good thing. I err on that side. And perhaps what we would want to think about is the millions of dollars in television ads that we see trying to influence legislation. I don't see how that's any different than this, and I don't see how we wouldn't want to treat that the same way.
Any thoughts, Ms. Hill?
Senator French, I have no thoughts on that. Perhaps Mr. Dosik has comments on that.
Why don't we do that? And we just to let everyone know, we've got about probably five more minutes before our floor session intrudes on our schedule. But Mr. Dosik, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the committee. Why don't you put yourself on the record?
My name is Thomas Dosik. I am an assistant attorney general who works with APOC.
And you've listened to the testimony of Ms. Hill. Is there anything about that testimony you'd want to qualify or add to or modify?
Yes, just a few brief comments. APOC exists to enforce laws on campaign finance and lobbying. If there is no active campaign or if the activity doesn't qualify as lobbying, then APOC does not regulate that activity. So issue ads that you see to attempt to influence legislation, for example, if somebody wanted to put TV advertisements on regarding this bill, that APOC has no jurisdiction or concern with that at the moment, with the caveat that existing groups such as political parties or other groups that maintain a long-term existence do have to regularly report all their contributions and expenditures. So if such a group was active in that area, that would be reported, I believe.
Senator Wilikowski makes an interesting point, though. I mean, you could have a major effort for or against a bill in the legislature. I remember it from the subsistence wars, frankly, full-page ads signaling out individual legislators, putting their images in the paper saying, you know, call your legislator and tell them to let the subsistence measure go forward. And those are separate and not part of any reporting scheme. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, well, they've rung the bells, and we've gotten an overview of the bill. Why don't we go ahead? Senator Cockle, please go ahead.
Just one of the questions that when we get the bill back that I would like for APOC to answer is, in the existing law, we have if a group intends to support, and in this language, new language, we have if a group intends to make. And if that intends language has had a problem up to date, and then should we put a reporting requirement rather than intention requirement? And I just want to put that out as a question as when we come back for the bill next.
Fair enough. Unless there's something else to come before the committee, we're going to be back here again tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning. And with that, we're adjourned.